I know that he didn't write about the system in a particularly systematic way, and I know that his own death cut him off at one point. Could you say something about what he did write and how that came out in Russian?
Well, Stanislavski kept a notebook and a kind of artistic journal from the age of 14 onwards, so from, say, 1877 to 1938, you've got all the notebooks, and everything is in the notebooks. And he also made several attempts to write, he discovered that straight lecturing was no good, actors hate being lectured at. He tried to write a couple of novels, which are frankly awful. But in the end, by the late 20s, he had decided that he would write a course of training in the form of a student's diary, this doesn't exist. An actor prepares his novel in a diary form. Of the original is a young man of 21 who is in fact Vakhtangov himself, based on Vakhtangov, who keeps a diary, and you've got all the entry of what happened in class, how I felt about class, what I did when I went home. And so that I think is a wonderful idea, because it makes you live with the student on all his troubles and all his doubts. It makes you live through the course as an direct experience, rather than being lectured at. The original Russian is much funnier than anything we, because it's much more human. There's a lot of ding dong in the classes. In 1928, when he was starting, he had two heart attacks, which ended his acting career, and he went to the south of France to recuperate with all his manuscripts. And there he met Elizabeth Hapgood, whom he had met in 1923 in Washington, when she served as interpreter at a White House banquet. Now, Elizabeth Hapgood spoke and wrote fluent Russian. Absolutely fluent. Her letters are, they could be written by a Russian. And she said, well, why don't I do an American edition? Because Stanislavski needed dollars. His son, Igor, suffered from tuberculosis, and the treatment had to be paid for in dollars in Switzerland. And of course, the ruble was of no value whatsoever. So she said, look, my husband Norman Hapgood was an experienced editor and publisher. So between them, they put together. He would make suggestions. She would translate them into Russian, show them to Stanislavski, who would then incorporate them into his manuscript. And so it was agreed. She signed an agreement with Yale University Press, so that there were going to be two editions, one in the States and one in Russia. The critical decision was taken, for purely practical reasons, to divide what was a single book into two.
And what are the two titles that we have in English?
An Actor Prepares and Building a Character. But they are, in fact, one book. They are the two first years of a course. Although, because they were published years apart, nobody realises that.
So I suppose one of the problems, as you've said in one of your books, is that students buy the first one and then think, well, that's all I need to know.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And there was a third volume published another 10 or more years later.
Yes, so that's that. But what we have to remember is what we know, that Stanislavski only completed one book, An Actor's Work on Himself, Part 1, which we know as An Actor Prepares. Building a Character, or Part 2, is a reconstruction from his archive material, as is Creating a Role. So he only wrote actually two books in his life, My Life in Art,
The autobiography.
And the autobiography, of which there are two versions as well. There's the American edition and the revised Russian edition, which I'm translating right now. So Hapgood went back to America with the beginning of the manuscript, and Stanislavski agreed to send her bit by bit, chapter by chapter. So I think she finally received the last chapters in 1935. But in between, Yale University Press had pulled out, saying it was too Russian, nobody would understand it. So she made an agreement with theatre arts books, but the condition was that it would have to be cut. So with Stanislavski's permission, she cut the book. And then Edith Isaacs, the general editor of theatre arts books, made further cuts, so that the book, An Act of Repairs, is actually half the length of the original.
As much as that?
Half the length. Half the length. And, of course, the diary form was gone, which I think is... why they dumped that, I do not know. So and frankly, An Act of Repairs doesn't make sense sometimes because of the cuts.
And can you illustrate in other ways how... this whole process has affected actor training and our idea of Stanislavski?
Well, I think the Stanislavski was very... said when he took the decision to cut the book in... to divide the book into two, he said, I'm very much afraid that if people only read the first half, they will think it's some kind of subjective psychological naturalism, and it isn't. But that, in fact, is the way it is understood. Very strongly reinforced, of course, because it's confused with the method.
Yeah.
Lee Strasberg's method, which is highly subjective. And is still to this day. I noticed in they were reading extracts from Kenneth Tynan's articles, and even Tynan, who was extremely well knowledgeable, writing in 1957, still thought the method was the system. Because there was a school, I think it was called the London Studio, which did a one-year course in the method. And that was what they thought was done as last.
And what other effects do you think did the Hapgood translation have? I mean, I remember you talking about units and bits.
Well, the thing is that Stanislavski's, again, this is one of the great technical problems, is that Stanislavski was very inconsistent in his use of terminology. He has one terminology in his books, another terminology in the last studio he created in 1935. So you've got two sets of definitions, I'm putting a glossary at the back. But then Hapgood created her own terminology, which doesn't reflect the spirit of what Stanislavski wanted. Stanislavski talked about my homegrown vocabulary, and he avoided scientific and technical terms where he could, and used all everyday words like chopping a play up into bits. When he comes to the section on dividing the play up, he describes a lunch party in which someone is carving a turkey, and you carve off a leg, here's one bit, and you carve a bit of breast, and there's another one. And he relates that to the Inspector General of Google. And that's how he talked about it.
But calling it units is much more pseudoscientific.
You see, and when Stanislavski talks about what is my task or problem, that has the same, the word has two meanings in Russian. What is my task here? Which is very much hands-on.
Yeah, it's also personal, isn't it?
She talks about an objective.
Which is something distant.
Now, sometimes Stanislavski talks about what is my goal, But he doesn't mean my goal is it might be to if I'm Hamlet to kill Claudius, but my task is right here is to make a fool of Polonius.
I wonder if you could say something about how you're going to structure your translation.
Well, what I decided is that I would put together the book Stanislavski intended to write. In other words, with the publisher's agreement, I would put both parts back together in one volume.
So an act of repairs and creating a character.
Building a character comes in as one, and I'm using the original title is An Actor's Work on Himself, which is in two parts. I've numbered the chapters continuously. So you've got 29 chapters divided into two parts. I've done a certain amount of editing because a lot of the when I looked at the second part, it was full of repetitions and redundancies and passages that were obviously copies of passages that had been included in part one. So I got rid of those. But it's still a bit of a doorstopper. It's
600 pages.
700 pages. The manuscript is 1,250, and I think it'll come out even in a largish format to something like 700 pages.
Mm. So you're condemning all those students to carrying a real hefty tome.
Well, possibly, I don't know, and this is for the publisher to decide, possibly we could produce a paperback edition without the critical apparatus. This was something I suggested 14 years ago. But the fact is we've got to try, because of the misunderstandings about Stanislavski, we've got a double constituency. We've got the universities, we've got people who need this for their study and their research and their teaching. And you've got, on the other hand, a student readership who just need to read about the classes. Now, I hope that the translation will be readable and colloquial so that they will enjoy reading it. Because they certainly don't enjoy reading An Act of Repairs. I've never met a student who finished reading it. They give up halfway through. It's so boring. But so I'm hoping, because of this, because we've got the dialogue back, because we've got the chit chat, I'm hoping that they will read it. And also, in a sense, it's not meant to be read from cover to cover. You know, by chapter.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you think on the academic level? Your contribution will be? What will you clear up? What misunderstandings?
Well, I think that the problem at every level, from A level to doctorate, is that people, unless they have Russian, people do not have access to what Stanislavski actually wrote. They've only got cut versions, edited versions, a lot of really rather dubious articles and essays, frankly, which are not based on the original texts. So I think the first task of the edition is to say, look, this is actually what he wrote. Now you can use it, because if you've got German, there are good German translations, and there's a Spanish translation.
So what kind of key concepts will benefit from your translation? What have we missed before?
I think the whole method of physical action is basic. No, you can't quarrel with Stanislavski's actor training as such, because it's entered into, most acting classes, whether people realise it or not, are using the system. But I think the method of physical action, which is a rehearsal method, that, I think, is the key.
We haven't really talked about the fact that the stage world is an imaginary world and not the real world.
Right.
There's a lot of confusion about that. Maybe if you could talk
about that. This is what he talks about. He said, how can I fool myself that this cardboard, this canvas, this paint is real? When I know it's all been manufactured in. But what if it were real? And the key thing is, if I believe it's real, it's real. And that's what the actor has to do. He has to believe in the reality and in the reality of the situation, but he also has to believe in the truth of his own actions. Am I behaving in a genuine way, or am I giving a little acting performance because I want to please the audience? In other words, is my behaviour probable?
And I suppose the implication is that obviously the audience makes the same leap of imagination.
Yes, Stanislavski's view is that if what you're doing on stage is interesting enough, the audience will come towards you. What he did refer rather unkindly, I thought, at one point to actors as gigolos. Who, you know, parade themselves in front of the audience to please. He said, no, let them come to you.
Mm. Although it's always a temptation, isn't it? I mean, how often have we seen actors who play to the audience shamelessly. And not to their fellow actors?
But sometimes the audience loves it.
Sometimes
that's what they want. Mm. He was well aware, because he was very good looking. He was 6'6". As a young man, and I was very tall for the period, and he was very good looking, and he was very aware that he was a bit sexy.
Mm.
And he had, in that sense, to fight against it.
Mm. Well, that's the self-criticism again, isn't it?
Oh, if you go through the biography, if you go through the letters, if you go through the journals, the notebooks, it's absolutely, ruthlessly self-critical.
Mm.
And that's why the system is so sound, because it's based on analysis of practice.
Mm.
It's not a theory. It's not an adido. It's not a theory of acting.
Mm.
It's an analysis of practice. I did that. What went wrong?
Mm.
And why was that set wrong for the? Oh, because the actor, it was no good for the actors.
Could you say a bit about Rose Bruford and acting training as well? When you went there, what was the state of the acting training then?
Well, because Rose taught the system.
Mm.
I mean, a version of the system using the Hapgood translations, but basically she used the system.
Mm.
But at that time, you know, there were only two schools in England that were teaching the system, Rose Bruford and Bristol Old Vic School.
Mm, that's astonishing, really.
And the rest were contemptuous. A load of nonsense, you know.
Mm.
Be a tree, they used to say.
Mm.
And it was, I would say that, and when I designed the degree, the acting degree in 1973-4, that was the first fully through designed Stanislavski course in the country,
right.
Or outside of Russia, anyway.
Mm.
It's
very late.
Others have followed since, including people who were my students or members of my staff. For example, the Manchester degree was launched by a member of my staff. It's only happened in the last 25 to 30 years.
Mm. And why do you think that is?
I think that some people knew. I mean, Michael Redgrave, for example, knew the system well and used it, and he wrote a very good book called The Actor's Ways and Means. Other people, I think that in one sense the Stanislavski system is very close to the English realist tradition going back to Burbage.
Mm.
We only have two or three passages about Burbage. But it's quite it's quite Stanislavski when they talk about his capacity to transform himself from one character to another, and also the fact that when he arrived at the theatre, he put on his costume and stayed in character until he took his costume off throughout the play, even in the dressing room. And the fact was, you know, it said that Burbage, however brilliant he was technically, you always felt there was a human being behind the technique.
Mm.
And Garrick's the same. Garrick said, saying to a young actor, don't copy me, play... No, don't copy me, respond to the situation.
And how do you think your new translation will affect all these courses? Because surely it will plunge everything into confusion? Or?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. I hope it will clear up confusions. And I also, there's a since the this edition was announced in 1992 originally, there's a huge interest both here and in the States because of the growth in drama and theatre courses. And look at the number of university departments here and in the States, in Canada, in Australia. So I think that I think it'll clear up. I hope it will. In his preface, Stanislavski said, "Look, this is not an academic book. It's a book to be used, and if it's of no practical use, then it's no good. There's no reason to read it. No reason to write it."
And you're also working on his autobiography.
Nearly finishing that now, yes.
And what was the problem with the original translation of that?
Well, as ever, there were two editions. I mean, the story of Stanislavski is the story of two editions, one American and one... No, he was persuaded to write... when he was on tour in the States in 1923-24, they thought it would be a good idea to bring out a popular autobiography. Of course, it would be commercially successful. And Stanislavski wrote it, dictated it mostly to his secretary, and it came out in May 1924, I think it was May. And then he decided he hated it. So on the boat back to France, he cut it up and pasted it. Pasted it in a notebook. I have to say, all the original typescripts are lost, and we haven't got an original manuscript of that edition. Appallingly translated by J.J. Robbins. I mean, it's the most dreadful. It's not English. So when he got back to Russia, he said, "No. I must revise this totally." So from 24 to 26. With his literary advisor, he rewrote it, added new chapters, expanded it, so that it becomes, in his own words, a much more serious discussion of my ideas about the theatre. And that came out in 1926. Now, that was the edition he wanted to be remembered by, and that, when he was negotiating with German and French publishers, was the version he wanted published. Now, it has never been. There is an edition. There is an edition that was put out by Progress Publishers in the 60s, which is, a very literal translation, but the text is there. And that has recently been republished in the States, in California. But apart from that, it's never been. So the people still think that My Life in Art is that American edition that Stanislavski disowned.